Luka Doncic drops 53 points on the Detroit Pistons in their loss to the Dallas Mavericks, 111-105. There's a lot of things that happened with this game that I want to talk about, but something that happened down the stretch still has me just utterly confused and just steaming inside. I mean, be honest. We're going to tell you what that is in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I am your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. And today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn to get started today. So the Pistons lose this game to the Dallas Mavericks in a game where Luka dropped 53 points on just 24 shots. He only missed 7 shots. Let me just say this out the way. Luka is crazy, man. He's one of the best players in the NBA, obviously, man. There's probably an argument for him to be the best player in the NBA. This dude is so crazy that the Pistons were outright double-teaming him as soon as he crossed half court 4 minutes into the game. It took 4 minutes of him dominating for the Pistons to just say, we're just going to double you outright for the rest of the game. And they did. They doubled him outright for the rest of the game, and it didn't matter. He still ended the game with 53 points. That dude is crazy. He's fun to watch. He has answers for every coverage you give to him and just plays at his pace too. Like that, he's just amazing. And the Pistons were in control for the majority of this game. They went down 10-0 to start the game, but then outscored the Dallas Mavericks. I believe at one point in the fourth quarter, they had outscored the Dallas Mavericks by 21 after that. And then things just went downhill. And there's a lot of things that happened in this game that just, you know, really contributed to the Pistons' loss. We're going to talk about them. Jaden Ivey fouled out this game. That sucks. Killian Hayes had probably his coldest shooting night since the first 10 games of the season. He's been a 35% shooter after the first 10 games. Since then, he's been 35%. Tonight, he couldn't hit anything in the second half. He was 2-5 from deep in the first half. He missed all 5 of his threes in the second half. That probably lost them the game, the fact that Killian couldn't hit a damn shot. It sucks. It is what it is. He had a terrible shooting night. Let's not try to rewrite the past, though. He just had a terrible shooting night. Probably lost him the game. Really sucks. Absolutely deserves criticism for this. That was pretty bad. So those two things happened. We're going to talk about Stu and playing backup five. That just looks awful. But look, I'm recording this about 10 minutes after the game ended. Yes, I came immediately over here to record as soon as the game ended. And I wouldn't be doing you guys justice if I came on here and told you guys how I'm actually feeling and my current feelings right now recording. For those of you guys who watched the game, you guys probably know where I'm about to go here. I might have watched, at the end of this fourth quarter, I might have seen the worst play, the worst decision I have ever seen an NBA player make in my entire life. I'm not joking. I'm still sitting here. The game ended. I'm still sitting here just utterly shocked about what I saw. So for those of you guys who didn't see the game, let me explain exactly what happened. So at the end of the fourth quarter, the Pistons were in a very close game. At this point, Killian Hayes had fouled out with about 2.5 minutes, I believe. Jaden Ivey fouled out about 4 minutes before that, three or four minutes before that. But outside of that, the Pistons still were in a very close game. It was a 2-point game with 1:30 to go. They were down by 2. Alec Burks, by the way, comes through with a clutch defensive rebound, showing immaculate hustle. Just a really great play from Alec Burks to get a defensive rebound and secure a stop on the Mavericks. So the Pistons come down in offense. And Bojan, who was on a heater in this fourth quarter, gets double-teamed. He throws it to the right wing to Sadiq Bey. Sadiq Bey pump fakes. The dude flies by. He has a straight line to the rim. He takes the straight line. The only defender at the rim is Luka Doncic. And right behind Luka is the Detroit Pistons rookie center, Jalen Duren, who's shooting 70% from the field since becoming a starting player for them. He shoots damn near 72%, I believe it is, from around the rim. So Sadiq Bey gets all the way to the rim, goes up, Luka jumps past him, and this is probably the easiest read in NBA history. Stevie Wonder could have made this pass. Sadiq Bey could have fumbled the ball into giving Jalen Duren the ball, and it still would have been a dunk. Luka comes past Sadiq Bey, flies past him. Jalen Duren's literally sitting wide open underneath the rim for a wide open dunk. Would have tied the game. Sadiq Bey instead throws up a left-handed hook shot and misses. Dallas gets the rebound. Luka then comes down and scores. Guys, look. Is that one play why the Pistons lost the game? No. Like I just said, Killian had just a terribly cold shooting night. And if he can hit even two more shots, two of his threes, the Pistons probably win this game. That's probably the biggest reason that Killian had such a bad night. Another reason, Jane Ivey fouled out. Another reason, Stu just didn't play well as a backup five at all. And then obviously, probably the biggest reason is Luka's just insane. He had 53. But guys, that play, it highlights the biggest issue with Sadiq Bey and the biggest issue with this team all season. This team plays for themselves. It's that play right there, I swear to God, it's the most selfish play I have ever seen watching the Pistons. The most selfish play I've ever seen watching the Pistons, and there's nothing close to it. The Pistons are in a close game. It's a two-point game against the Dallas Mavericks, a game that you've played really well. The team's fought hard. Guys are missing shots, but the Pistons are fighting hard nonetheless to keep this a close game against Luka Doncic, who has 53 points. They're playing hard, and they have a chance to win. Down two, you have a chance to tie the game. And the easiest read, I could have made this pass. You guys could have made this pass. Fans could have made this pass. The assistant coaches on the bench could have made this pass. Dwayne Casey could have made this pass. The referees could have made this pass. There's no other way to explain this than it just being one of the most selfish plays you could ever make, ever. There's no other explanation for it. And that right there is the biggest negative from this Pistons season, is that there's been so far too often that guys just appear to be selfish on this team. There's been way too often that Sadiq Bey has just been straight up selfish on this team, on his drives. I feel like he never looks to pass on his drives, but this one right here is just takes the cake in NBA history. It's just so egregious. I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. I don't know. If people wonder why they say, Koo, why do you think that Sadiq Bey, you question whether Sadiq Bey is a winning player? Why do you question all these things about Sadiq Bey? That play right there highlights it. You can improve in some other stuff. But for 2 years now, going back to last year and this year, the tunnel vision that he has, I'd call it tunnel vision. He just didn't have great vision on drives. But that play right there is just straight up selfish. There's no other way to explain it. It's just straight up selfish. And the Pistons, that's a 4-point swing. The Pistons could have took this game to overtime. Who knows what happens after the final 50 seconds? Maybe Dallas comes down, misses, and the Pistons come down and score. Or maybe the Pistons lose anyways. But this was a 4-point swing in a close game, in the clutch game, where your team had fought hard. And instead of making the right team play, instead of making the right basketball play, instead of just making the obvious play, he made the most selfish play I have ever seen. And it cost the Pistons this game. It was one of the things that cost the Pistons the game. That was not the reason. There's plenty of other things. But that was definitely one of the reasons the Pistons lost this game. I could go on for like another 20 minutes raging about this. Look, I'm one of those people. You guys have probably picked up on this. My favorite players in the NBA, my favorite teams to watch in the NBA are the ones who make the right team, make the right basketball play, make the right team play. pass the ball around, find the open guy, make the right play. Not necessarily the best ISO scorers or the best tough shot makers. I don't really like seeing tough shot makers. Alec Burks is one of them. He's a fantastic tough shot maker. But I like to watch guys make the right play, play beautiful basketball, move the ball around, that kind of stuff. Those are the kind of players and kind of teams I love watching. That right there was the most anti part. That if you could go any kind, the most extreme opposite of my kind of basketball I like watching, you get that. You get what Sadiq Bey just did at the end of this game. I can't say I'm at a loss of words. I've gone for like 11 minutes about this, but my God, man. We'll wrap it up, but I'm not joking, you guys. If you haven't watched the game, go look it up. Go look up that last play. See it for yourself. I'm not joking. It was the most selfish play I've ever seen a basketball player make. It's crazy. I could not believe. It's the easiest read any Piston probably has had all year. I'm in shock. I don't know, guys. I'm in utter shock. I can't believe it. I seriously cannot believe it. It is what it is, I guess. When we come back, we'll talk about the other things that lost the Pistons this game here. There was a lot of contributing factors. Bojan had a really good game. At the end of the podcast, we'll touch on some big news concerning Bojan Bogdanović. But we'll talk about that when we come back, man. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, FanDuel. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. Download FanDuel now so you can bet Super Bowl 57 with no sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown. The FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe and secure and super easy to use. Best of all, you can get paid your winnings instantly. I hope you guys took my advice this past weekend. I told you guys should have took the Kansas City Chiefs when they were underdogs at +105. Then they became favorites at 104. You guys should have took my advice because they ended up winning this game, a close game against the Bengals. Right now, I'm a little undecided about the Super Bowl. I can't give you guys a suggestion yet, but definitely stay tuned. Make sure you guys are watching that money line, see where it moves to. If a favorable line comes around on FanDuel, definitely take it. But I'll definitely keep you guys in the loop about where I'm feeling with this. But join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/LockedOn to claim your no-sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. Seriously, I could go on and on about what we just talked about in that first segment. I'm still very upset about what I just saw. I'm still in shock. I'm not joking. I can't believe what I saw. I didn't want to believe I saw it at first. Like it's crazy. But I don't want to pile all of it, even though how bad of and how selfish of a play it was. I don't want to pile all of it on Sadiq Bey. So we're going to move on. And there are plenty of reasons why the Pistons didn't close this game out. And the very first reason, I think, is at the very top. And I'm Mr. Consistent, man. That's what they call me. Who else calls themselves Mr. Consistent? Is it Nick Wright, I think? I'm also Mr. Consistent. I'm also Mr. Fairness. Killian Hayes is probably the biggest reason why the Pistons lost this game. And look, you guys know I'm the biggest Killian fan out there, but he's probably the biggest reason why they lost this game. Now, since November, since after the first 10 games, since then, Killian Hayes has been shooting 35% from deep. He's been a fine shooter. He's been an absolutely fine shooter on nearly 5 attempts a game. However, tonight he had just an insanely cold night. He couldn't hit anything in the second half. He was cold as possibly you can get. It looked like he was down in Antarctica. That's how cold he was. Tough to see. Tough to see. Because not only did it affect him, And not only obviously did it affect his stats and his season stats, etc., but this one definitely cost the Pistons the game, I think. 100%. If he's able to hit some of these threes, I think the Pistons win this game. All the threes were good looks. All of them were good looks. He just wasn't able to hit them. In the first half, he was 2 of 5 from deep. He was 3 of 10 overall in the first half, but 2 of 5 from deep. I was living with that. I thought he played a really fine first half. 2 of 5 from deep, that was fine. But then the second half, he was 0 of 5. He couldn't hit anything. And again, this is... I know this is what's going to happen. I know there's Killian haters out there. I know they're going to take this time to now go in the comment section and tweet me and go crazy about this. But this is what I'm not going to do. We're not going to rewrite the past. Yes, he had a bad night. It's okay to simply say he had a really bad night that cost the team to win. That's really not good. It's terrible. He needs to own that. He needs to deserve criticism. But what we're not going to do is sit here and act like he's been a bad shooter all year. He hasn't. So that's not what I'm going to allow to happen. I'm already seeing it start to happen. I'm not allowing it. It's not going to happen. But I will say he definitely had a terrible night shooting the basketball and probably lost the Pistons game. He can't have these kind of nights. And this is right here. This is why finishing around the rim and drawing free throws is by far the number one priority for his offseason, this upcoming offseason, whether it's for the Pistons or another team, just for his career. Because if you watch Lonzo Ball over the years too, this is the same thing that happens with Lonzo. Lonzo is a really damn – he's a better shooter than Killian is right now, by the way. But Lonzo is a really damn good shooter. But when Lonzo's having off nights, which is one of the things Pelicans fans used to complain about a lot, if you watch Lonzo in New Orleans, he'd have really good shooting games. And then in games where he would just not be able to shoot anything, he'd shoot like 2 of 8, 2 of 9 from beyond the arc and just not be able to do anything else, not make life easier for himself. Because Lonzo also doesn't finish around the rim. Lonzo also doesn't get free throw attempts. So when you are so you're so determined or stuck to, like, you don't have anything else. All you have is your outside shot. When you're having a bad shooting night, you don't have anything else to make it easier on yourself. You don't have anything else to get an easy shot. There is no such thing as an easy look. Get a bunny or something. There are no bunnies for players like Lonzo Ball, players like Killian Hayes at this stage. Because they can't get to the rim consistently. They can't finish around the rim. And they don't draw free throws. So that's why this right here is another example of why that has to be number one on his priority list this offseason. Because it's hard to make a living off of just jump shots. Unless you're like J.J. Redick, you can't just live only off jump shots. As we've seen, he's played much better. I think since the first 10 games, he's shooting 42% from the field and 35% from beyond the arc. So he definitely is improved, obviously. We've all seen that. He's become a better shooter. He's played much better offensively. He's averaging like 12 points since then. However, again, that's why his percentages are going to continue to hover up between 42, 41, 40, 42, 41, 40. He's going to keep going around like there because he's so reliant on his jumper right now. It's just not sustainable. That's not something that you can keep doing. You're going to have inconsistent nights. You're going to have inconsistent games. Because you're not going to be on every single night as a jump shooter. Unless, again, like I said, unless you're J.J. Redick or Steph Curry. And even Steph is one of the best finishers for his size we've ever seen. That's why when he's having off nights, he can still get to the rim. Finish. Get free throws. Now, obviously, Killian's never going to be Steph Curry. But you guys get my point. This was highlight number one. And Killian, by far, I think it's fair to say he probably lost the Pistons this game because of how bad he shot. So he deserves all criticism he gets for this night. I won't stand for trying to rewrite the past and make up stuff about what he's been this year. He's been a fine shooter this year. But this game, he deserves all the criticism. There's no defending that. He probably lost the Pistons this game. That's tough to see, but he got owned that, and he deserves the criticism. Another reason why the Pistons weren't able to close this game is because Jaden Ivey just never was able to really play. He had 6 fouls. And it's not one of those fouls, you know, where you're like, oh, that's a bad call. Why'd he get those? His last 3 fouls were really dumb fouls for him to take. He had one where he just slapped Luka after he had already made the layup and got taken out. Then at the end of the game, he had another one where he just swiped down and hit someone again. I think it was Dwight Powell. He hit him in the face. On Dwight Powell got the defensive rebound. Everyone's getting back in defense. And instead of just getting back, he just swiped down and hit Dwight Powell in the face and picked up another. Like, those ones, you can't have those fouls, but you definitely can't have those fouls when you already have 3, when you already have 4, when you already have 5. You have to be smarter about that. So that Jaden Ivey was not smart at all with his fouls. He was taking really bad fouls, and you hate to see that. That is another big reason why they needed Jane Ivey down the stretch, especially once it was clear that Killian just couldn't hit no shots. You have to get Killian out and put Ivey in the game and let Ivey try to get something working. So that was tough for the Pistons. And the crazy thing is, I wanted to come on the podcast and talk about, and I'm still going to actually into it. You know what? Screw it. I'm still going to talk about it. Jane Ivey's improvement from the mid-range. Now, it's not been like some crazy improvement. I'm not going to sit here and call him Rip Hamilton. But from where he was at the beginning of the year to where he is now, a big improvement. At the beginning of the year, if you guys were listening to the podcast at the beginning of the year, you guys will remember, I would come on here and talk about how he was just so out of sorts on his pull-ups. His body would be flying one way. His legs are flying sideways, forward. Just all off the mark. He just was all kinds of places when he would pull up for his mid-range jumper. He was nowhere near under control in his mid-range pull-ups. But he had about three pull-ups tonight. And he's been doing it for the last few weeks. And he's been much more under control. Legs aren't swinging all over the place. Body isn't falling over. He's not parallel to the ground on his fadeaway, on his pull-ups. They look very much more under control, smooth jumpers, and they were going in. So you're already seeing, like I said, at the beginning of the year, he was struggling with some stuff. You're already starting to see little increment improvements in certain areas as the seasons went on. Has he all of a sudden become a 20-point per game scorer? No. You don't need that, though. Has he all of a sudden become a 40% three-point shooter? No, but you don't need that, though. Has he all of a sudden became Chris Paul at the point guard position? No, but you don't need that, though. What you need to see from a rookie is see these little increment improvements in certain areas. It shows you that he's adapting to his environment. He's adapting to the NBA. He's seeing stuff and then picking up on it, learning it, digesting that information, and then understanding what he needs to do. So that's one of the bigger things that I've seen from Ivy and why I've been so much more impressed with him lately than I was at the beginning of the year. Because I am seeing these little increment improvements, whether it's kicking the ball out more, taking less bad shots around the rim, trying to find open guys, whether it's being much more controlled in his mid-range pull-ups, whether it's taking better shots, not settling for so many step-back threes anymore. Like, there's so many little things that don't show up in the box score, but just little things that he's improving on and changing about his game as the years went on that lets me know that he is seeing stuff. He's watching film. He's digesting this information, and he's improving, and he's getting better and changing stuff. And he's just a rookie. So that I want kind of twist into a positive light. Yes, he can't foul out. He can't have those bad fouls, but you're seeing those increment improvements from Ivy. So that's really good to see. I'm not going to spend any time talking about Stu. We were kind of running out of time here because I do want to talk about a Bojan Bogdanović report. And actually, not even a report. This is coming from Bojan Bogdanović's own mouth. We're going to talk about what he said. What is exactly that he said? And what should be the takeaway when we come back? But first, you guys got to hear from some of our lovely sponsors. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, so we heard from Bojan Bogdanović himself. Not anyone else, not rumors, not allegedly. This was Bojan Bogdanović from his own mouth. We're going to read this, and I'm going to tell you what my takeaway is. So, apparently Bogdanović sat down with Michael Soto of Hoops Hype and told him this regarding the trade rumors and all this stuff. He said, quote, having conversations with the club, Troy and the owners, they have assured me that we're going to be great next year. We have a lot of cap space to sign great players. We're going to have a high pick again, so that's going to help us a lot. We have a great young group of guys. When Cade went down, that kind of hurt us big time. We were thinking that we'd maybe be fighting for the play-in tournament, but when he went down, he was our main guy. All of our offensive strategies were connected to him. When he went down our season, we've had a lot of ups and downs without him. He goes on to say, I've heard the rumors, but I'm trying to stay away from those conversations. I don't even have any social media like Twitter. I don't read much about that. It's not in my control. It's about the franchise. I'm just going to try and stay focused and play as best I can. Then we'll see what's going to happen at the end of the trade deadline. So, this is my takeaway from what Bojan said. I think that what he's saying is true. I think he's being truthful. And I think it kind of goes with what we've been told and what the reports have said, that the Pistons are not just openly chopping him, have to get rid of him. They're okay with having him for next year. They're okay with going into the next offseason with them because they are trying to be better next year. They are trying to take a little bit of a step next year. So if they have Bojan, it's not like they're going to be pissed about it or anything. So I think he's telling the truth there. I don't think he's telling the truth when he says that they were going to be a playing team with Cade. This team is not very good roster construction-wise. I told you guys this a while ago, way before the year. This, with or without Cade, this team was not going for the play-in. But I think majority of what he's telling the truth. I do believe Troy has told him that they're trying to be good next year. I do believe Troy has told them that they see a future where he is a part of that and that he's helping them take the next step next year. I do believe all that is true. I believe he's telling the truth about all of that. But then also, that last quote I read kind of lets me, like, the part about he's heard the rumors, but he stays away from it, he's going to let it play out and see what happens. I think he also understands that, like he said, it's a business, and that if someone comes and offers a really good deal for him, the Pistons will take it. I think that's where we're at right now. I don't think that's it's changing. I think that's, you know, I don't think these quotes from Bojan means, oh, the Pistons are just not trading him. There's no way they trade him. I do think it's probably unlikely now. Yes, I would say that. Beforehand, you guys know I've been saying I thought they would trade him. Now I do think it's unlikely that they do. It sounds like that they're a little bit more willing and okay with keeping him than I originally thought. I thought that, yeah, they were cool with keeping him, but they also would really like to get this first-round pick. Now it looks like I'm starting to question whether that, you know, whether that's actually the case. I think they're a little bit more willing to keep him than I thought. But look, I don't think this really changes anything probably from what Weaver's thought all year. And that's, look, we'll keep him. We'll keep him. He can help us win next year. He's going to be a good spacer for Cade. He's getting older, but, you know, a lot of people say shooters, you know, they don't forget how to shoot the basketball. So even if he gets older and slips off a little bit, he still will be able to provide spacing. And if they are trying to be better next year, then we're okay with keeping him. However, if a team comes with a great offer, they're not going to deny it. I don't think that changes anything. Like if the Lakers were to show up, if the Lakers were to give them those two first-round picks unprotected, the Pistons are pulling the trigger on that trade. If someone were to give them an unprotected first-round pick, I think they would probably take the trade. It sounds like, though, that teams are not willing to give them an unprotected first-round pick and another young guy, bring back Bojan. And if they don't get that, I think what this means is that they're just going to hold on to Bojan. So now it's really in the other team's courts. So that's my takeaway from this. It's probably more unlikely than I thought that they were going to trade him. But that I'm not going to come on here and say that that means they're not trading him. It just depends if another team's going to meet this asking price. And from right now, at this point on the 30th where I'm recording this, it doesn't sound like they will. Now things change around the deadline. This is how it always goes. Teams play this game of chicken all the way up to the deadline and see what happens. If a team all of a sudden says, you know what, screw it, the day of the deadline, here you go, take this unprotected first, and this young guy, we need Bojan, I think the Pistons pulled the trigger. But I'm just becoming a little bit more skeptical than I was a few days ago that a team actually will be willing to do that. And in that case, I think Bojan's telling the truth, and I think the Pistons are fine moving into the offseason with him on the team. And I'm starting to think there's a very, very likely future with Bojan Bogdanović is a Detroit Piston past February 9th. Let me know what your guys' takeaway was, though, from what Bojan talked about with Michael Scotto of Hoops Hype in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. That's all I've got for you guys today. Thank you guys for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button at the Lockdown Pistons YouTube channel. Leave us a 5-star review or whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. And until next time, stay safe. Go Pistons. I'll see you on the next one. Peace out.